Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. The Wisconsin Wetlands Association is presenting a series of virtual talks about wetlands and the plants and the animals they call home. And a couple of guests to talk about those and to zero in a little on whooping cranes as well. First, Katie Belfus, one of our guests, is back. She's the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Katie, good to have you back.
Always wonderful to be with you. Thanks so much, Larry.
And with her is Stephanie Schmidt. And Stephanie is the Whooping Crane Outreach Coordinator at the International Crane Foundation headquarters in Baraboo. Stephanie, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Larry. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And as you listen to these two experts talk, I hope you'll join in. Have you maybe watch some of the wetland presentations? What questions do you have about the importance of wetlands, maybe? What would you like to know about whooping cranes? Lots we can talk about. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Katie, let's start with you. What's the inspiration for the wetland coffee break? I love that the title for that, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, we are going into our second year of this wonderful series. We started it during the very initial COVID lockdown when all of us were stuck at home, and we wanted to be able to keep talking about wetlands with our members and supporters and keep learning about wetlands even while we were stuck at home. And gosh, it was so popular and it was so much fun and so informative that we've kept it going, even though things are a little bit looser now. So we get together about twice a month on Zoom and host speakers from our staff and also from partner organizations to share their knowledge about wetlands, whether it's plant communities or animals or wetland management, all kinds of topics, a wide variety.
And is it always the same, the two times each month? What are the normal schedule?
Yeah, normally it's Friday mornings at 10:30. And we say about every other week because, of course, we float around, you know, national holidays and my vacation schedule and various other things. And so it's about every other Friday. But we have all of the dates posted on our Wetland Coffee Break page at wisconsinwetlands.org. And I should say these are all free and open to anyone who'd like to join. All you need to do is sign up so that we can get you the right Zoom link.
And Stephanie, you're speaking at the next wetland coffee break on Friday. So what are you? I'm pretty sure I know what you're going to be talking about, but tell us anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be talking about the whooping cranes that we have here in Wisconsin. And this really couldn't have come at a better time for us. Whooping cranes have just made their way back to Wisconsin on migration. We just got reports from our biologists in the field that our birds are starting to build their nests and lay their eggs. There's about 13 eggs on the ground right now in Wisconsin, and about 30 days we'll have chicks. We'll be talking a little bit about the history of the International Crane Foundation, some of the cranes that we have here in Wisconsin, focusing mostly on whooping cranes. In our presentation on Friday, we'll also talk about what led to the historic decline of whooping cranes in the 1940s, the work that we're doing as an organization to bring them back to Wisconsin, some of the threats that they're continuing to face today, and ways that you can really be a crane hero or give a whoop about whooping cranes and protect these birds in our state.
Give a whoop about whooping cranes. All right. What about sandhills? Kevin in Madison has a question for us, I believe. Kevin, hi.
Hi. It wasn't really a question. I guess it was just more of an observation. I live out in East Troy, and I noticed several months ago a bunch of large nests in some trees, and they're all kind of grouped together. And doing some investigating, I realized I think they're cranes. And we do have a fairly large resident population. It's right around the East Troy Electric Railroad. And then in the last couple of weeks, I've noticed bodies and legs, and they are cranes. And I didn't know you could, it's right between 43 and ES. It's like a little strip of land there. It's wetland. Does that need to be on somebody's radars, like the DNR, so somebody doesn't start building homes or make a parking lot?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm glad you shared your observation about the birds that you saw. So it sounds like you might have seen great blue herons, which look, oh my gosh, almost exactly similar to sandhill cranes sometimes. Our sandhill cranes are about a slate gray, and great blue herons are about a gray or a blue. But great blue herons will build those massive nests up in trees. And they're also a super wetland-dependent, long-legged bird, just like our cranes that depend on wetlands. But if you do see sandhill cranes in Wisconsin and want to report where you're seeing them or the wetlands that you're seeing them in, you can definitely head to our website, savingcranes.org, and we'd absolutely love to hear where you are seeing these cranes. As for wetland protections or things you can do, I'm sure Katie can add to some of that and talk about the wetlands in your area.
Yeah, Katie, go ahead.
Sure, and I will just share, as one who had to once upon a time learn the difference between great blue herons and cranes, that the thing that I also tell people to look for is when they're in flight, the heron, and even when they're sitting, the heron will often have a curved neck and the crane will more often have a straight neck. And so that's another way to sort of parse out. But I agree with, they're sort of the same size and same kind of habitat. But if they're in trees, they're not going to be cranes, because cranes, our species of cranes are going to be nesting on the ground. As to wetland protections, Wisconsin is lucky that we have some good wetland protection laws. They happen both at the federal and the state level that provide some oversight to prevent folks from just being able to build willy-nilly on top of wetlands, because it is a problem, obviously, when you fill wetlands, and it will violate some of these regulations. Now, I am not our policy specialist, so I don't want to go in too deep on regulations, but they do vary from place to place in the state because of the nature of the regulations and distance from development and a variety of things. And so I would ask you to consult your local DNR water management specialist, and the DNR has a website where if you type water management specialist into the search term, you should be able to find the person for your area that could advise you if you have concerns about a wetland that you think might be developed.
So what is it about wetlands that create opportunities, or why do cranes like wetlands and other species?
Yeah, so cranes are actually specialized for wetlands. So they like wetlands because they're so perfectly built to live in wetlands. They have these really long toes that helps them to walk through that muddy environment. Our sandhill cranes, they can blend in very well with that environment as well. But these wetlands are incredible because of their many functions, too, that they provide to our cranes. So these wetlands provide them with wonderful food resources. Our cranes rely on crayfish, crabs, fish, turtles, frogs, any sort of thing you can think of that comes from a wetland. A crane will probably try and eat it. So they really depend on them for food. They also depend on them for water. They depend on them for nesting. Wetlands are wonderful nurseries for our cranes. They build these large cattail mound kind of nests. And in there, they'll raise their eggs and their chicks. They build them over the water. But another thing that's really wonderful about wetlands for our cranes is the space and protection that it provides. So having water around a nest provides incredible protection for our cranes from some of those terrestrial predators that they might be concerned with, like raccoons or coyotes that are typically deterred by water. And then that space aspect comes into play for our cranes, because we're talking about really tall territorial birds. So they really need to build this large territory or expanse around them. And these large wetlands can really provide that space for them to develop a territory. And again, have that food, water, shelter, space to nest.
Let's take a call from Lori in Green Bay. Lori, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for having me on, and thanks for the show. I really appreciate it. I wanted to call, it's a little bit off topic of the wetland question, but it's in regard to the cranes in Wisconsin. I've been following the Conservation Congress ever since the hunting in our state parks moved through that process. And there is a movement afoot to create hunting seasons for sandhill cranes in Wisconsin. And I just wanted to have the representative from the International Crane Institute talk to that. I also am aware that in our state legislature there were bills put forward, and I'm not sure how far they went, again, to enhance our sportsmanship and also to create a hunting season for cranes. And I am extremely concerned about that and have been working to try to bring awareness to that issue.
Yeah. Let's, because we're getting up to the top of the hour here, I want to allow our guests a chance to talk. Stephanie, do you want to comment? Do you guys take a position on this? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to comment. First, I want to say thank you for being so informed about this proposed sandhill crane hunt and for really telling people about your concerns and sharing your concerns. We really appreciate that. So yes, the sandhill crane hunt has been discussed in Wisconsin. The bill is Bill SB 620. This year, the sandhill crane hunt bill was not passed, so it will not be happening this year. But this issue may come back up again next year. In the meantime, we are asking that you do kind of what you've been doing. Talk to your legislators, talk to your friends, share with them your concerns about this sandhill crane hunt. And also, again, go to that Wisconsin Conservation Congress and share your opinions there as well. As an organization, we have taken the stance that, backed by science, we do not support the proposed sandhill crane hunt. And I would encourage you to head to our website, savingcranes.org, and really see our full stance and the full breadth of this issue and where we stand on each aspect of the issue. But really simply put, we do not stand with this sandhill crane hunt because we believe sandhill cranes have a very different ecology than other water birds who are hunted, and we really don't know yet the potential harms of hunting in a breeding area. And to address this issue, we've been working very closely with hunters. We've heard from both hunters and non-hunters alike the concerns that they have and the value that they place on sandhill cranes as a non-game species.
Thanks, Lori, for that question. Appreciate your call. Our two guests, Katie Belfus and Stephanie Schmidt, will be with us right up until 12:30 today to talk about wetlands. We'll talk some more about those coffee breaks, too, because I want that video series, because I want to learn some more about that as well. And, of course, you can join in with your questions. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or email to ideas@WPR.org. Take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we will be back. I'm Larry Mueller. Larry Mueller here for the Ideas Network. We're talking about the importance of wetlands and the look at how the whooping cranes are doing right now. Back with us, Katie Belfus, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. With her is Stephanie Schmidt, the Whooping Crane Outreach Coordinator at the International Crane Foundation headquarters in Baraboo. So, why are wetlands important to you? What questions do you have about whooping cranes? Join in the conversation. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@WPR.org. I want to go back to those wetland coffee breaks for a minute. And as we were talking about earlier, Stephanie's going to be presenting this Friday, which is coming right up, about whooping cranes at the coffee break. But someone was wondering about previous presentations. Is there, Katie, a chance for people to view previous presentations, and could you comment on maybe some of the specific ones that, you know, have been?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm happy to say we have recorded every single one that we've hosted from the very beginning, and they are all posted both to our wisconsinwetlands.org website and also to our Wisconsin Wetlands Association Facebook page. And so all of the recordings are available there for you to watch at your leisure. We've covered, you know, we have a pretty wide audience for these sessions, anywhere, you know, from natural resource professionals to private landowners to folks who just really love wetlands for whatever reason. And so we cover a variety of topics. We've had a lot of stuff about managing invasive species in wetlands. We have talked about habitat restoration and bird monitoring on the Oneida Nation reservation. We've talked about the connections between wetlands and art, and we've had some beautiful wetland photography shared and some other wetland art from folks in our community. And if you're a private landowner, a wetland landowner yourself, we have a lot of stuff that might be of interest to you about how to care for the property that you have. So all of those are available, and we hope that you'll go check those out on our wisconsinwetlands.org website or on our Facebook page.
Let's take a call. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Guy in Madison has a question, I believe. Guy, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. Glad to talk with you. So my question is, my wife and I live near the Cherokee Marsh in Madison, and the Yahara River flows through there, and it's a wide area of the river. And there are a lot of cranes here. I guess we call them sandhill cranes. I tuned in late, so I didn't get the difference between a whooping crane and a sandhill crane, but we have a lot of cranes here. And at night in the spring, mostly, there's night bow fishing for rough fish. And the hunters, we'll call them, cruise around quietly but with incredibly intense lights. They're like the stadium lights at a football stadium or a baseball stadium for a night game. I mean, they light up everything in all directions, enough to wake up humans from their bedrooms with the light pouring through the windows. So I just have to think that although it's a good thing to get rid of rough fish, that those lights are disturbing to wildlife in general, and cranes perhaps in particular. So that's my question.
All right. Thank you for calling. Well, let's see. Stephanie, maybe go to you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Before I answer your question, I do want to quick share with you a difference between sandhill cranes and whooping cranes. We haven't covered that quite yet, but I would like to cover that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, whooping cranes are a 5-foot-tall white bird. They are North America's tallest bird. They have very long black legs, kind of a red patch on their crown, and a black mask on the side of their face that looks a little bit like a mustache. They have a really long neck, just like the sandhill cranes, too. And when they have their wings out, you can see that they have black wingtips. Our sandhill cranes are a little bit shorter, just about 4 feet tall. They can be about a slate gray or maybe a rusty reddish brown color. They have just a red patch on their crown and those black legs, but then their whole body and wings are that sort of brown or gray or reddish color about them. As for your concerns with the intense lights for bow fishing affecting the sandhill cranes, you know, I'm not quite sure about the answer to that. That would be something that I think our research department would have a much better answer to. I know, just like you said, intense lights can be disturbing to wildlife, and we know that cranes have very keen eyesight. It's what makes them so great when they migrate during the day, so they can be able to see where they're going. But as for the specific effects of it, I'm not quite sure what it would be for cranes. But if you would like to send an email to info@savingcranes.org, I'm sure some of our biologists would be happy to provide a more specific answer to that for you.
Thanks, Guy, for calling. Appreciate your call. And you, someone else wondered about your background. What kind of training or education have you had, Stephanie? And I'm going to ask Katie that too. But Stephanie, about how do you become a whooping crane coordinator?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there are many ways that you can become part of the whooping crane family, or as we like to say, join our flock. So I started getting involved with whooping cranes after I graduated from UW-Madison. I took one of our internship programs working with our captive flock, and I got to help with breeding the birds, costume rearing chicks, and then releasing them. So a lot of the people that do end up working with whooping cranes, they usually start out in our internship program in some way. So we offer education internships, outreach internships, working with our captive flock, and doing research with the wild birds as well. And I know Katie is also a past intern from the International Crane Foundation, so I'm sure she'd love to share as well.
It's true. Right after I graduated from my undergraduate time, which was a long time before Stephanie, I did an internship. I didn't work with the cranes. I worked with the site restoration at the International Crane Foundation, trying to restore the farmland that the Crane Foundation is on. back into prairie and to make a better connection between the uplands and the wetlands that are found there on the Crane Foundation site, where sometimes wild cranes come and fly in. And then the cranes that are in the visitor area that have nets around them and things so they can't fly away, they all squawk and make noises because this wild crane is coming in. So I also had a Crane Foundation background. It's a fabulous place. And I did my graduate work here at UW-Madison in the Nelson Institute to continue that training. And here I am working in wetlands 20 years later.
It's still at it. And we've probably been talking on the air for the last 20 years as well.
I can date it by the age of my oldest son, and he's going to UW-Madison this fall. So
okay, there you go. Oh, man, you could email in a question, too. Mark did email one here. Mm-hmm. ideas@wpr.org is a place to go, by the way. What is the definition of a wetland, and how is it different from a marsh, a fen, or even a lowland that's wet most of the year? Do constructed wetlands offer the same benefits as a natural wetland? That's yet another question.
Yeah, great questions. Well, so the way that we talk about wetlands is they are the places that are located between the places that are always dry and the places that are always wet. And we say it in that broad way because there are so many different kinds of wetlands in that middle space. Not all wetlands are wet all of the time. Many wetlands are wet in the spring and early summer and are dry as a bone by September. And that's their natural hydrology. Other wetlands, like a lot of deep water marshes, are wet all of the time. But I think a lot of us carry around the idea that you have to have open water and water birds and cattails for something to be a wetland. And what's part of the work that I do is trying to expand that picture that folks have in their heads, because we have lots of different kinds of wetlands in Wisconsin and globally. But here in Wisconsin, we have wooded wetlands that are in the wooded areas are what we call ephemeral ponds. So those are the ones that are capturing water in the spring, snow melt and spring rains. And then by the summer, late fall, theirs are dry, but they're critical to absorbing water, and they provide really, really important habitat for amphibians and other species that need those little shallow depressions in the spring during migration. We have wetlands that look like prairies, but they're wetter than, you know, prairies are on a go from dry to wet. And so on the wet end of prairies is our wetland types. So lots of different kinds of wetlands here in Wisconsin based on soil and water. And the plants that grow there is how you decide what kind of wetland you have.
We have Bob with a question next from Lake Wabagabon. Bob, are you there?
Hello. I am, thanks. Lake Wabagabon, yeah. I got 80 acres, 240s, up here in Douglas County, near the Brule River, within a couple miles of the Brule. The upper 40 is... you know, highland, turkeys, deer, bears, everything. The lower 40 is a tamarack swamp. Tamarack, black spruce, I guess he said. I had the forester in there. Are there animals that are attracted to that tamarack swamp, you know, bigger, older trees that are unique to northern Wisconsin? I see the deer and bear. The bears going it out of there, I know. But are there animals that are specifically, or, you know, toads or whatever, they're specifically attracted to those tamarack swamps?
Bob,
definitely,
thanks for calling.
Yeah. Wetlands are huge habitat for lots of different kinds of wildlife. And we like to say that as much as 75% of Wisconsin's wildlife depend on wetlands at some point in their life cycle. And your question about specific stuff that might be found in your wetland might go beyond my preparation for today's session. But I know there will be callers who will call in and say, Katie, how come you didn't remember the such and such? But definitely there will be creatures that are in there, and I'm embarrassed that I can't name them right here. Maybe, Stephanie, you can rescue me here. No? All right.
Well, there'd be a broad range of animals that would certainly... You know, I've been around tamarack swamps, and you not only bear go through there, but deer go through there, and then you might have beavers through there. You'd have a whole variety of wildlife, and big and small, toads, frogs, that sort of thing as well.
Indeed, yeah.
And insects.
And lots of insects. Yeah.
Lots.
That's one of the downsides of wetlands, sometimes people say. But we think of insects as the food that draws all that other wildlife in, right? And we want, if we have a healthy wetland, there's going to be lots of critters in there to eat the insects and the mosquitoes that none of us love.
Thanks again for that call. Appreciate it. So someone wondered, many parts of the state are a bit dry yet. I think even southern Wisconsin, even though we've had a little bit of rain, we're several inches under normal. What effect does that have on wetlands?
Well, like with they're used to it. They're used to that fluctuation. And so that's the beauty of wetlands, right, is that they have wetter years and they have drier years. And many times that's what they're adapted to. And sometimes, often, that drying and wetting is actually really critical to the health of a wetland. So that's the good side. Of course, if there are areas that are too dry for too long, then we have sometimes that can open up the area to invasive species or other challenges where things are not sort of normal. Stephanie, do you have anything you want to add to that answer?
Yeah, absolutely. I always think of wetlands in this phrase, and it's kind of an oxymoron, but they are in a constant state of disturbance. They're constantly fluctuating, and that's really what makes wetlands so critical to our landscape, is with this constant fluctuation and disturbance, we do see such a high diversity of plants and animals that are able to use wetlands at some point during their life cycle or during the year.
And are constructed wetlands, I'm not sure that you answered that part of it. Are constructed wetlands the same as, do they give the same benefits as a natural wetland? And we do get a bit of that going on in the state where maybe a piece of a wetland is.
Yeah. Thank you, Larry, for bringing that question back, because I had a note that we hadn't answered that one. So I appreciate you bringing that back. Yeah. So constructed wetlands, there's a thing called wetland mitigation, which I think is what you're referring to, which is when there's impacts to an existing wetland that, whether development or road construction or whatnot, we have a rule that says that you need to compensate that by restoring or building a wetland in another place to sort of make up the difference. Well, it's better than nothing, I'll say that, but it's always better to keep the wetlands that Mother Nature made and to try to maintain those as healthy and big as we can in their place. And if we can't do that, then it's good to mitigate somewhere else. But often that mitigation doesn't happen in the same geographic area. And so the services that a wetland might provide, the natural benefits, flood control or water cleansing, we're going to move those benefits out of the area where we lost the wetlands to a different area. So you're not actually making up the natural benefits that you're losing in that same area. The science will show us that, it does show us that even after 20 years, a lot of these constructed wetlands don't do as well as the natural ones at the jobs and the natural benefits that they provide. It takes a very, very long time, so the best thing is to maintain and protect and restore the wetlands that we have. But we won't win our challenge. We won't be successful with our challenge if we only protect the wetlands that we still have in Wisconsin, because we've already lost half of the wetlands that we used to have. So we have a big deficit there. And so it's critical that we restore wetlands, because we won't improve water quality. We won't improve a flood abatement with wetlands if we don't restore more of the wetlands that we have already lost back to the landscape.
I'm thinking about losing. We at one point, we had almost lost our whooping crane population. And now I'm talking about years and years back. But Stephanie, I mean, weren't we down to 60 birds or something for the whole nation at one point?
Yeah, in the 1940s, we were actually down to 20 birds in the wild total. And that's a massive decline. Pre-European expansion, it was predicted that there were about 10,000 whooping cranes throughout the United States, and they would have spread out through most of North America. And that's really due to those fertile wetlands and prairies that were present there. In 1940s, that population dropped to only about 20 birds. Today, there are about 650 birds, 650 whooping cranes, that is, spread throughout North America in the wild. And now they spread between two migratory populations that are pretty divided, one in the east, one in the west, and then two non-migratory populations as well.
So 650 isn't really a ton of birds either. I mean, if you had something like avian influenza, I don't know if that has effect on something like a hooper or not. But it would be easy to see how that delicate balance could be tipped the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That delicate balance can definitely be tipped the wrong way. You know, we've had our challenges, of course, with the pandemic. And even losing one whooping crane in one of our wild populations can be an incredible setback for these populations' growth. None of them are at the point of being self-sustaining yet. They're still continuing to rely on the International Crane Foundation and some of our crane conservation partners to keep putting birds back out in the landscape and very closely monitoring them. As for the concern with avian influenza, I would definitely recommend, if you're concerned about avian influenza and cranes in Wisconsin, please head to our website, savingcranes.org. We have some information there by our veterinarian on site, who is talking about kind of the concern with avian influenza and cranes.
And Katie, back to you, because there's a couple of things I still wanted to mention. One was, you guys come up with the coolest names. You've got a Swamp Fest. I understand. Talk about Swamp Fest for a minute.
We have a fun thing this year, Larry, to try to encourage more folks to get engaged with wetlands and engaged with the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. We have our Swamp Stakes. We are having, you know, I know you here at Wisconsin Public Radio, you have sweepstakes all the time. So we have a Swamp Stakes. We've got our own thing going over here, but we have a beautiful 1941 fully lovingly restored old town canoe that'll be the grand prize of our Swamp Stakes. And there's a variety of ways that you can get entered in our Swamp Stakes. And we are organizing a lot of events around the state for yet this summer and fall, where you can come learn more about wetlands and the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and get entered into that Swamp Stakes. So you can check that out on wisconsinwetlands.org as well. And we hope that you will learn more about our organization and become a member.
You know, I went to your site and looked at that canoe. It is beautiful.
It is absolutely gorgeous. And one of our board members who knows a lot about wetlands also knows how to do that work and was the one that found this old decrepit canoe and restored it to glorious health and beauty. Jim Ruwalt.
Yeah, he just did a wonderful job. Well, now Stephanie's talking on Friday at your wetland coffee break. So give us a rundown again. And what time is that? And then how do people either view the old ones or get involved with the ones coming up?
Yeah, that's great. This week, Stephanie's going to be talking at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, April 15th. And if you go to wisconsinwetlands.org, right at the top of our webpage, there's a button you can click to take you to the Wetland Coffee Break page, where you'll see both Stephanie's talk and a link to register for her talk, but also the upcoming talks that we have later this spring. We have some for wetland landowners in particular. We have some on sedges in Wisconsin, Blanchard's cricket frogs. And then if you scroll all the way down to the bottom of that page below the upcoming talks, you'll see links to the previous presentations, and you'll be able to find what you want there.
And Stephanie, well, you're going to talk about cranes, whooping cranes, I'm sure, but give us a taste of where are you going with that talk.
Yeah, so for this talk, I'll be introducing you to the International Crane Foundation. I'll introduce you to whooping cranes in our state, talk about their historic decline, what were some of the causes of that, what is the International Crane Foundation doing to bring these cranes back to the landscape, what are the threats that they're facing, and how can you help cranes? Another thing that we're going to be talking about in our presentation as well is that we would love for you to come and visit us in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Our site is reopening on May 1st. We'll be open from May 1st through October 31st. Again, we're located in Baraboo, Wisconsin. We're the only place on earth that you can see all 15 species of cranes. You can learn about the cranes here in North America, as well as the cranes around the world, and the work that we're doing as an organization to help these cranes and the flyways, watersheds, on ecosystems that they really depend on.
And that is a beautiful, beautiful place. I visited more than once. And with the new construction, with the new facilities, it's unbelievable. And you mentioned artwork earlier, and that's one of the cool things. I like going into your shop and taking a look at what you've got in the way of art, because you got some really cool stuff in there. Stephanie, Kate, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to another visit. Thank you again.
Thanks so much, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Katie Balfus and Stephanie Schmidt with us today. Katie, of course, the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Stephanie's the Whooping Crane Outreach Coordinator for the International Crane Foundation. And thank you so much for listening, and I hope you stay with us right through the afternoon. John Freiberger is with us tomorrow to talk about spring home checklist. But stay with us. More things in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.